Hello and welcome to the final bell, the official Geelong Cats podcast. It is great to have you with us. We are brought to you by Lake Imaging. Really appreciate them jumping on board for this season, supporting the podcast so that we can keep bringing it to you every single week, talking about the Cats, what they've been up to, how the team is shaping up. Unfortunately, this week we're going to be talking about a loss that perhaps shouldn't have happened, but we'll get to that shortly. We've got Tom Atkins, now the star defender for the Cats, was the forward. We're going to talk to him shortly. We're going to get to your questions as we do. We're going to have, in the last segment, a bit of a reflection too. It's obviously a very sad week this week for the football club with the passing of former president Frank Costa and his influence on the Geelong Football Club and the Geelong region as well. We're going to reflect a little bit on Frank later on. Our thoughts, of course, are with all of the Costa family at this very, very sad time. Scotty Gallen, who is my normal co-host on this podcast, has decided to run away and just go and party for a few days down in Warrnambool at the races. The good thing about that, though, is it means we've got an upgrade and we've brought in one of the number one journalists in the game, afl.com.au, AFL Media. Mitch Cleary is joining us. Hello, Mitch.
G'day, Cameron. Thanks for having me on board. Good to be here at the old school as well. First time I've been back in a while, St. Joey's.
Yeah, that's the other part of the upgrade. We are recording again from St. Joey's in Geelong, my old school, and now my current workplace. Mitch is an old St. Joey's boy, so it's great to have you back here, Mitch.
And it'll be interesting to see if they let Tom Atkins in the door, because he's an old college boy from down the road.
Yes, he played footy at St. Joey's Footy Club, yep, but didn't go to school here.
Pretty rare.
Yeah, we don't usually allow Geelong College people in the doors here, but also our wonderful producer, Rowan Mackey, is a former college boy. So he's vouched for Tommy Atkins. We're going to let him in, Justin. Plus, I'm still scared of Tommy's dad, Mick, who I played cricket with and coached at St. Joey's for a long time, and he's a great person, but I'm still petrified of.
Heard some good stories about Mick, and I know Tom's probably as aggressive at the ball as his old man is, and he's been going great guns, leading the comp, I think, in defensive ground balls in the back half. He's been a revelation down there, and probably something the Cats needed in that back half because, to be honest, probably lacked a bit of drive out of the defence, and sort of, I think what they're trying to do with Tom Atkins is a bit of a Liam Baker type role, what has done so well at Richmond, and he's been going great guns for the first 7 weeks.
It's really working, isn't it? And we'll ask him about what happened on Saturday night, and probably the only time for the season he had his colours lowered a little bit, but the first 6 weeks was a real shining light, and yep, it's been a fantastic move. So we'll get to Tommy Atkins a bit later on. Mitch, let's talk about Saturday night. It was a game at quarter time.
Yeah.
We're watching at home, warmth of the couch. We almost had the feet up thinking, oh, how good's this? We've got another game like what happened against West Coast the week before. Unfortunately, it felt like Geelong almost had that feel about them after quarter time. And Sydney came at them hard, to their credit, and just let Geelong let them back in the door and said, here you go, have a little bit of confidence, you're back in the game. Game on, and unfortunately resulted in a loss.
Especially off the back of that West Coast result. So strong and then flying in the first quarter. The Cats had 130 disposals, on track to break the all-time record if they kept that up. And then they just let the Swans back in the game. To be honest, the last 5 minutes, I'm sure we'll discuss that, but it really shouldn't have got there. The Cats won the inside 50s by 26 on the night. They kicked 2.6 to Sydney's 4 goals straight in the last quarter. Peppered the goals. Tom Hawkins missed a couple of opportunities that he would have otherwise taken. And then the Swans got their confidence up in front of their home crowd, and a few of those big guys for the Swans out-muscled the Cats defenders.
And Sunday morning, my eldest boy's soccer, catching up with a lot of the parents, and I'm sure these conversations were happening everywhere amongst Geelong fans. We were robbed. We were robbed. That should have been a mark to Jeremy Cameron. I had to straight away stop them and say,
thank you, thank you.
Forget about being robbed. It was a blown chance by the Cats. Yep. It was... When the game is so much in control at quarter time, you don't let them back in the door, first of all. Knowing they're going to come at you and they're a good team and they're going to throw something at you, don't let them back in the game. But even then, once they were back in the game, there were still so many other opportunities to not allow it to come down to, was it 15 metres or was it 20 metres and a mark to Jeremy Cameron? That didn't decide the game for me.
I'm with you. And you almost go back to the karma of round two. The AFL came out that day after and said that Zach Bailey should have been given a free kick for his tackle on Mark Blitzer as well. The 15 metres, yes, it clearly travelled 15 metres, and I think James Rowbottom probably another second or two Could have been pinged holding the ball for that tackle from Joel Seld on the siren. It wasn't to be. But like you said, I'm with you. It shouldn't have got to that stage. The Cats had all the momentum heading into the second quarter, gave a young Swans team on their home deck a bit of a tail up, and they went with it. And, you know, the Rucks situation, Tom Hickey coming back from what we thought was a 6 or 8 week PCL injury, only missed the one game, straight back into the ruck, had more elastoplast on his knee than I've ever seen before, strapped him up, had 10 clearances in the game. The Cats, and has been the case for a long time now, had to go with Mark Butsarves for the final 12 minutes. Reece Stanley was on the bench.
And Tom Hickey got the 10 coaches' votes, so unanimous, 5 from each coach. And all our listeners are going to agree with this, I believe, and it's been the frustration. We see what Reece can produce last week against Nick Natanui. Call him the second, maybe third best ruckman in the competition. I'm going to give Max Gawn the crown.
Yeah.
But Nick Nat and Brody Grundy, perhaps in the next couple, produced an astonishing game. Destroyed Nick Natanui. Hit-outs, clearances, impact around the ground, scoreboard impact, the lot. Walk out of that game going, you beauty.
Yeah.
This is it, Reece. This is what you've got to hold on to. Fast forward only 1 week against a banged-up Tom Hickey, as you mentioned, Mitch. And got destroyed by Hickey. And, I mean, you can say, okay, you're not going to have the game of your life every single week, but there has to be a standard that is just at least competitive and strong, and you break even with the ruckman as a worst-case scenario. Not destroyed. And that's the frustration. As soon as he's being beaten like that, it rips a Mark Witsarves out of the true position they want to keep him in and affects so much. I throw my hands in the air sometimes. Well, what do we do? If he can produce the quality that he did against Nick Nat, I see the upside. But when I know the downside is something else, I'd rather go perhaps with a Darcy Fort or a Sava Radigalea, who maybe right now you don't quite get the upside of the Nick Nat game. But you're pretty confident you're not going to get the downside of the Tom Hickey game.
And the Cats still won the clearances, but I think those key moments, the one where Hickey threw Stanley out of the ruck and kicked a goal straight out of that contest deep in defensive 50, they're the moments that come back to haunt Reece. And I'm with you. It feels like these more athletic ruckmen, he can take them around the ground and probably expose. He's definitely fitter than Nick Natanui, take him forward like he did last week. But these old-school ruckmen, like a Tom Hickey, like it, Toby Nankervis in the grand final last year. That second half Nankervis played was instrumental in Richmond's win. So I'm just curious to see what they do at selection this week, because Fort's now strung a few games together at VFL level after his preseason knee injury. Radigalea's played the one game back after groin soreness, but we know how much the coach loves him. Does he consider him? And on Cats fans who read AFL.com.au, you're probably sick of me saying this, but take Mark Butsarves out of defence. It exposes you down there. No Harry Taylor this year. Hayden McLean bobs up and kicks 4 goals. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul. I think Butsarves needs to stay in defence, and that's where he's best suited.
Well, Mitch, I'm certain if those listeners have been listening to you on afl.com.au and they've been listening to myself on this podcast, then they are absolutely clear that Mark Butsarves needs to stay in defence. Yep. I think everybody else makes a more confident, positive move and decision when they know Blitz is on that final line. They can aggressively squeeze up when they have to.
Yep.
They can confidently come off an opponent to try and intercept or be that third man up spoiler when they know Blitz is in that pivot position at the back. So absolutely, Darcy Fort best on ground in the VFL. Yeah. And then I think that's a couple of weeks in a row. I feel bad saying after a week ago, Nick Natanui singing Reece's praises. But I think you say to Darcy, here's your opportunity against Toby Nankervis, who you know is a competitor, who's a beast, who I did the game on the weekend for radio on Friday night for ABC, and Toby Nankervis, the amount of times that he just awkwardly lands on an opposition on ball, conveniently puts a hand on the chest as he's trying to get up and just pushes them down again, or a knee hits here. He just makes the opposition hurt whenever he plays. Well, I'd be saying to Darcy Ford, you give him a little dose of his own medicine. Do it back to him.
And if it wasn't for Dusty Martin last year, we might be talking more about Toby Nankervis's second half in that grand final. Yep. He was huge. So, yeah, I think that's one consideration. The second ruck is still going to be a concern. Tom Hawkins has got it covered. The way he can ruck in that front half is awesome right now, and it has been for a long time. But the second ruck is still a bit of an issue. Do they pull blitz subs? I think the ideal for the Cats, and Chris Scott spoke about it in preseason, is Hawkins, Radiglia as a second, and then Cameron pushing up a bit higher.
Yep.
But Radiglia might need another week or two to get his fitness up to the level.
If Tom Hawkins can take the forward, call it 60, perhaps, maybe forward 50 ruck work, and Darcy Fort doesn't have to work down hard to those, perhaps he's the type of ruckman, like a Toby Nankervis, who only needs a couple of minutes break because he'll get the breaks when the ball's in the forward 50 as well, where he can ruck 90-95% of the game. The need for that second ruckman, not trying to outrun anyone or, you know, super athletic around the ground, just play a little bit more traditional ruck, it might still work. Injury concerns coming out of Saturday night. Grian Myers, subbed out of the game, lower leg injury, subbed out for, who came on again? Zach Guthrie. Thank you. What are you hearing with Grian?
Still going to be a test later in the week. The six-day break might hurt him. If it was an 8 or 9 day break, it might have been a little easier for Grian to get up. If he does miss, I think it's a perfect opportunity to bring Sam Simpson. I know I listened to the show the last couple of weeks. No bigger fan of Sam Simpson than yourself, Lingy, and a good Joey's boy as well. But
he's creative. He brings others into the game. He's prepared to also play on and make decisions. He's a quick decision maker when things are moving and maybe a play breaks down. He still makes the right decisions.
And with Dangerfield injured, I think Duncan needs to play on ball more. So he's that perfect connector as the person delivering inside 50, Sam Simpson. I saw him play, albeit against the AFL Academy a couple of weeks ago, a group of 18-year-old kids, but he was clearly the best player on the ground. And then, you know, Narkle's in that conversation as well, came in. Do they look for a player like Constable, who's doing really well? Max Holmes had some big numbers in the VFL on the weekend. So there's a few selection dilemmas, and the six-day break might open a few doors.
I wonder, with the running capability of Richmond, and they just sustain their intensity right across the ground, and they're, you know, it gets out to the wider parts of the MCG, and they just get the next number across. And it's those who don't stand out as phenomenal, they're frontline players, but it's a Castagna and a Rioli and a Jaden Short and a Baker, who you mentioned, who was really good on Friday night. They just get there. I wonder if Charlie Constable, with that part of his game, maybe being the weaker part, the outside, the ability to get to the next out number, maybe it is a Max Holmes. Yep. Very young and a big ask against the reigning champs, but just that running capability and giving him a really clear, concise role. You do this from a wing or from a half forward or from a half back, wherever it might be. Jordan Clark, I think, stays in the team for that reason again, that outside run and that capability. I see that. I think if Myers does miss, I'd love to see Simpson in. I'd give Darcy Fort the go. So maybe two or three changes coming into this one.
And everyone you spoke to around the VFL side for those couple of games Max Holmes played pre-season, was it that everyone thought he was going to get drafted to the comp as an elite runner, the hurdles champion that he is at under 18 level, but he went inside and sort of raised a few eyebrows as well with how good he performed. So he can go inside and outside now, Max Holmes. Just on the midfield, remiss of us not to mention Joel Selwood's feet on the weekend. You would have been tackled a couple of times by Joel Selwood at training. He's gone past Matt Prittis as the most recorded the most tackles in the history of the game. Pretty strong effort.
Amazing effort. Not surprising, of course, knowing Joel. The one that I'd say too is every one of his tackles, you feel them. Yeah. You really felt them. And I know he probably held a couple of percent back on us as teammates, and he was a bit bit younger, and I felt every one of those. So those opposition players who he doesn't like, and as he built a more mature body over those years, he tackled for keeps.
I remember speaking to Matthew Scarlett last year when Ablett played his 350th and Selwood played his 300th. I spoke to Matt for a piece on both, and he still pinpointed, I can't remember the player that he absolutely nailed in one of his first training sessions, Joel Selwood, and he said the rest of the group just stood up and took notice. And that's Matthew Scarlett talking at that point.
Yeah, that's I can't recall that exact incident like Scarlett can, but I do recall. So, and you remember too, he did that week when you're in the AFL Academy.
Yep.
Every player in that academy got billeted out, or whatever it's called, to all the AFL clubs, and you'd do a week training there, and you'd sit in on meetings just to see what the professional environment was. Even after that week, we thought, wow, this kid is something. We thought we wouldn't get a shot at him because he'd go one or two. as luck would have it, he fell those few spots down to number seven. Then fast forward to when he started training, it was so obvious from day one with his appetite for the contest, his appetite for hard work, his running, everything. I mean, I recalled at that similar time, the standards that he would set of the group when he unleashed the most fearful spray on his brother Troy in a pre-season session. Troy had come from Brisbane, had finished up there and was going to captain our VFL. And Troy was just joining in some of our running sessions. He's working for the club and captaining our VFL. It was a Saturday morning at Torquay Footy Oval and we were doing 200s and 400s and 800s. And we're on the 400s, basically the end of the session. Troy was running, still with the main group, so we had the elite group of maybe five or six runners, which included Joel and Corey Enright, myself, and a couple of the really good runners. Troy had probably finished fourth or fifth in maybe the six or seven other 400s. On the last 400, Troy got up to beat Joel by about a metre, and it was a great effort, a fantastic run. And Troy hadn't been holding back. He hadn't been bludgeoned. He'd done the whole session, but he beat Joel in the last one. Well, Joel turned to him and ripped him to shreds for having taken it easy on the six or seven previous ones to put in this last effort to beat, and just went at him, and it was vicious. And we're all standing back thinking, wow, if that's the standard you set on your brother, that's saying incredible. You should have been running harder on the previous six, thought, okay, we might need to step up as well.
That's his older brother. Imagine what Scott copped.
No, and again, he was very good on Saturday night, as he's been. What, do you reckon we're gonna ask Tom about this when he gets in here? Do you reckon anything gets said about last year in the build up to Friday night against Richmond?
Chris Scott doesn't seem to me as like the sort of coach that draws on emotion. You've been in that room. Does he draw on emotion that much? Because it feels like he's very players do their job. We try and take the emotion out of it where we can, but I think they'd have to.
Yeah, I wonder. And I wonder what Tom's response will be, because I know with our experiences, Bomber didn't draw on that. In the year I had with Scotty, he didn't draw on that. It was trust that there's such a competitive bunch of guys that they will draw their own pain or motivation or whatever it is, grit, to say, okay, enough's enough. But I just wonder with a couple of years now, prelim final, grand final, losses to Richmond and Richmond being spoken about as this incredible team, maybe three in a row, all of that, whether or not it just they lock in on it a little bit.
Yeah, and interesting to hear Chris Scott speak on AFL 360 on Fox Footy last night. He was saying that they felt like their preparation for the last time, couple of times they've played Richmond, has worked, and they've actually been on top in certain parts of the game. We know about the grand final and the prelim before, but sometimes Richmond just overwhelm you. So I wonder if that's drawn on and there's certain key moments through the game. I speak about Chris. I think if you're a younger teammate, like a Sam Simpson coming in or a Max Holmes, if he gets a game, just the look in Joel Selwood's eyes this week would probably be enough.
I did notice Joel walking off the field on Saturday night after the loss. I'm sitting in my lounge room, very, very safe and comfortable, and I was scared. He had a look of fearful anger.
Yeah.
And when he gets angry, don't worry. Everyone thinks Joel's this lovely, nice gentleman. But in the rooms, they would have known exactly how he felt. And I think he will. You're right, Mitch. He'll take that into Friday night. It'll be a great game.
Yep.
Huge game. Friday night, obviously, 7:50, MCG. Geelong home game, I think, this Friday night. I'm 99.9% sure. So hopefully a big Cats crowd get along to that game. No, it's Richmond home game. I take that back. Anyway, get a big crowd along there and stir up those Richmond supporters. It'll be a great game. Might be a few changes. Perhaps Grian Myers, the one in doubt with that injury. Maybe we're throwing up Sammy Simpson's name. Maybe a change in the ruck. Maybe they bring in young man Max Holmes for his second game of footy. We're going to take a break, Mitch, and get to Tommy Atkins, who's just about to walk through the door. And then a little bit later on, we're going to get to some fan questions and also have a little bit of a reflection on Frank Costa and his passing. We'll be back with you shortly.
For all your new season Cats gear, hats, hoodies, you name it, get down to the Cats shop at GMHBA Stadium today or visit thecatsshoponline.com.au. The Cats Shop is your one-stop shop for everything you need to support the greatest team of all. Go Cats!
Welcome back. It's great to have you with us on To The Final Bell, brought to you by Lake Imaging. As promised, we do have our guest here. It's lucky, Mitch, that we've allowed him into St. Joey's, given he's a Geelong College boy. But I think for this man, we make an exception, don't we?
I saw him trying to work his way to reception at the start, just having a few difficulties trying to work his way up to the room, really.
A lot of St. Joey's people trying to keep those Geelong College folk out. But we love Tommy Atkins. Tommy is our guest. Tommy, first of all, thanks for joining us here.
All right, thanks for having me.
Just quickly, how'd you pull up? You okay? It was a tough loss. We've been speaking a little bit about it, what happened in the game. How did you personally pull up? And can you just give us a little bit for the fans, a bit of a wash up of, unfortunately, what happened?
Yeah, physically fine. The ground's actually soft as, like, we couldn't believe how long the grass was. But physically fine, but mentally a little bit scarred. But obviously it was a pretty tough game. Thought that we played pretty well for most of the game. And I think it was just their accuracy in the end that got us. And obviously a few plays down the stretch. We had our review yesterday and we just watched the last 5 minutes basically and thought about what we can do better in those late game scenarios. But yeah, obviously a disappointing end, but well.
When you sit there in that meeting and things that you're watching it and you're watching it on replay and it's slowed down and it's from behind the goals and all of that, what's it like? For the people who are listening, our fans out there, when you relive it and it's stopped and it's slow-mo and everything like that, and it all looks so simple and you just think, well, I should be there, or this should have happened. But compare that to what's actually happening on the field where it's chaos. What's it like reviewing those moments and just seeing and that frustration of, yeah, we should have got that right?
Yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable. You're often sort of watching and thinking, like, what was I thinking there? And, obviously you're really tired. It's a late game and you're just sort of in scramble mode. But, I don't know. It was hard to watch yesterday. Like, obviously I was involved in a couple of plays. I was involved in the last play as well. So, it's just really disappointing to watch. But you just need to try and take a positive mindset to it, I guess, and just try and learn from it because, before you know it, we're playing Richmond next Friday. So, can't dwell on it for too long.
It's funny too, Mitch, the most uncomfortable, awful meeting I've ever sat in was at that same ground against that same team and the review of the last 2 or 3 minutes of that 2005 semi-final from my memory. And you just...
And you guys reviewed it and the season was done.
Yeah, we reviewed it and we reviewed it quite a bit over that pre-season to learn from it, to make sure it never happened again. It is so obvious when you slow it down and the coach is talking it through and you go, of course we should have done that. Of course I should have done that. Of course this needed to happen. But in the moment, gee, it's tough. You can't all of a sudden magically click your fingers and think, oh, I need to be 40 metres over that way or I need to be 10 metres that way. Exhausted, concentration, everything. The opposition's very, very good. Yeah, I feel for you, Tommy, sitting through that. But
so how do you go off the back of that and the learnings you get from that? Because a six-day break, your time on the track this week will be reduced. How do you go from seeing what you saw in the review to actually training it this week before Richmond? Because the six-day break compared to an 8, 9, or 10-day break is, a totally different week.
Yeah, it is different. It's shortened, but we still only have the one main session a week. So what we're missing out on effectively is a craft day. So that's just more skills and a bit more fine-tuning stuff. So we'll have our main training tomorrow and all those points that we went through in those last 5 minutes. We'll train that a little bit, but also Richmond have a pretty specific play style as well. So, I mean, each team's different. Take what we can from the last 5 minutes, but, you know, Richmond are different to the Swans. So, that's the way we'll train tomorrow.
You're 7 weeks now into your time as a halfback. How are you adapting to that? And, you know, Tom Papley on the weekend having to go with these sort of guys. How are you adjusting to having to pick up these guys and what are you learning from those different roles?
Yeah, it's just a work in progress. Each week I'm sort of learning something different. I think I was brought in to try and be a bit more attacking off half back, get the ball in my hands a bit. And, there's sort of been weeks where I've found that that's not happening and I'm playing more of a defensive role. And so it's just learning how I can balance that out and still be able to have an impact on the team when I might not be getting the ball in my hands. So, obviously on the weekend, great player, Papley, and I thought me and Jed did a pretty good job on him for most of the day, but, it obviously doesn't mean anything when he's, had a big impact on the results. So, Obviously learned from those moments and, the people that I played on the last 7 weeks. But, yeah, like I said, try and focus on next week.
The backline coach you've got is Matthew Scarlett, obviously a great person to learn from and a terrific coach. The forward line coach wasn't too bad at it as well, and probably the role that you're exactly talking about. Sometimes Corey Enright would play an attacking creative, use his magnificent skill and ability to read the play. Other times he'd play a lot more defensive and have a balance towards the defence. Do you go and pick his brain a fair bit, even though he's coaching the other mob up the other end of the ground?
Yeah, we're pretty spoiled as a playing group, aren't we? I think our entire coaching staff were really great at, obviously, their roles and when they were playing. And, since I've moved down back, I haven't really spoken to Burry too much about playing that role that I'm playing now. I actually got booted from the forwards WhatsApp, so I think I'm on the outer at the moment with Boz. But, I'll definitely at some point touch base with him. But, we're blessed to have such great resources as a playing group.
I think I interviewed you maybe a week or two into the season. You were still in the WhatsApp. What changed that?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I might have said something that I didn't mean or not too sure, mate. But that's all right. No skin off my teeth.
Scarlo's not influencing you too much, is he, though? When things aren't working and there's a few entries, it's about the mids and the forwards. They're not putting on enough pressure.
Yeah, I did hear that. That was a bit of his motto when he was playing. But, it's tough. It's sometimes you see things as a backline group and you want to say stuff, but, you just try and keep it positive, I guess.
And I can assure you, Scarlo never put it as nicely as I just put it to us midfielders.
Speaking of Corey Enright, because... can you take us back to the start of pre-season and I think even in the off-season when you had that conversation with him about your role because part of the forward group last year found your way out of the team during finals. Can you take us back to that conversation with Corey and what actually unfolded and how you now find yourself in defence?
Yeah, it sort of all happened really quick. I didn't think at all, I'd be playing here round 7. I've already played 6 games as a defender, but... we just caught up. We had our exit meetings, obviously, and everyone was still reeling kind of from the grand final when that happened. So didn't get a whole heap of clarity about what my role would be next year. But I think it was maybe month and a half afterwards when we were about to go into pre-season. Me and Burry just went and had a bit of lunch, had a few beers and just had a chat about what he saw me doing next year. He just mentioned offhand, Scully's mentioned about taking you down back. Would that be something you'd be interested in? And I could sort of see the bigger picture. I could see the people that would be brought in and how I was on the outer last year of the forward group. So, I was just keen to sort of try and find my way into the team. I didn't really care where it was. So, from there, obviously trained for a couple of weeks. And, luckily enough, Scarlett's had the faith in me. And, see how we go.
Been one of the real... big. I don't want to embarrass him and say in front of him, but one of the real big positives of the year so far. I think it's been a fantastic move, and credit to you to have that mindset. Not every player would have that of saying, "Well, no, I'm a forward. Play me as a forward," rather than open mind and go, "Okay, I'll learn a new role and I'll become a valuable team member in that role." What have you noticed the really good forwards do that perhaps when you were playing as a forward? You didn't have that particular trick up your sleeve or you hadn't learnt it yet. What have you noticed? What are the best do to try and beat you?
Yeah, it's a great point. I've definitely noticed things since going down back. Hopefully none of my future opponents listen to this, but just getting behind me and making me turn away from the footy, I really struggle with that. So I think all defenders would say when they can see their opponent in the footy, it's a lot easier. A couple of times on the weekend and when I played earlier in the season, when they really get behind your back and you're like, where are they? And you turn away from the footy, that's sort of when it gets a bit tricky. But, that's all I'll give away, I think.
Smart man.
And what about some of the things you've had to learn? Because chatting to you a few weeks ago, talking about the different aerial work you have to do as part of the defence, I know you're dominating ground balls, I think, up until last week, leading the competition in defensive 50 ground balls. What are some of the things you've had to learn to become part of that core group back there and you take the listeners into what's involved in that?
Obviously all the aerial stuff, marking, I think I still really need to work on that. I think I dropped 3 or 4 marks on the weekend, but apart from that, probably just structure and still wanting to get involved and trying to get the ball as well. So, you know, obviously I mentioned before I was brought in to try and have been of an impact attacking wise as well. And, you know, just setting up and running to the right positions because, last week I may have been running to the wrong positions because I didn't get much of it. But, if you can support the contest, I mentioned to you as well, support the contest as that sort of high half back, be there to release the pressure when your teammates have got it. That's sort of the stuff I've been trying to work on.
I'm interested in your take, just a more broadly, on the current VFL. It's still called the VFL, isn't it, Mitch?
Yep.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Do you still see a pathway under what's currently happening for somebody like yourself? Somebody who doesn't get drafted at 18 straight out of the Geelong Falcons, has to hone their craft and work on their game, build a mature body to showcase their ability to play at AFL. Do you still see that clear pathway for somebody? Is the current VFL program the right program to allow those late developers?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I don't think much has changed from the point that they're still playing in front of, or they're playing against AFL teams. That was a big thing for me, was when I'd sort of had offers to go to the Sandful or the Waffle, nothing against those leagues, but the main drag point was I'm going to be playing against teams or more AFL secondary teams. So coaches will be there watching their second team. They might notice me. And then obviously it flows from there. But I still reckon that's going to happen this year. And competition will be good this year. I've already watched a couple of games and it's really enjoyable seeing those Thursday night games. And I think the fact that games are more televised, we used to have the odd Sunday game when I was playing. But, there's two games televised or however many there are each weekend. Like, that's just more exposure. So, definitely more opportunity.
Now, we're here at St. Joey's today, Lingy, but we've got to ask Tom about his time at St. Joseph's Football Club because played a lot of GFL footy, part of a premiership at Joey's. Who are some of the mates you still keep in touch with? And I think Sam Walsh might be a couple of years younger than you, but these sort of kids coming through, are you still keep in touch with a few of your mates that you played with and now in the league?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. One of my good mates is the captain down at Joey's, Alex Hickey. Obviously I played footy back then. I was, a bit older than Walshy, and I don't think he played too many games at Joey's. He was too busy off in the Falcons and Vic Country. But, obviously didn't get to play with him. But, some of my best mates are still playing for Joey's. James Allen. I won't go through them all, but, some of the best times I've ever had. I was just a young kid when we won that 2015 flag, and I was pretty lucky in some ways to get dragged along by the older boys, but things I'll remember forever.
Well, you are a great example to all of those out there, and I'm going to embarrass you here. Bad luck. You just got to put up with it, Tommy. But for someone who, I'm not saying you weren't ready, but perhaps not ready at 18, a great example of not giving up on that dream and keeping at it, improving the game. And I know right throughout that time when you're playing VFL, just every single week it was, did you see what Tom Atkins did on the weekend in the VFL? Surely, is he going to get a chance? Tackle numbers, possession numbers, contested ball, and then you added impact to your game as well. And just more every single week, everyone was, well, I think they should give him a chance. And great that you got that chance, but even better that you're taking that chance as well. Keep up. I know you're disappointed about what happened on Saturday night, but keep up the great work that you've been doing to the opening part of this season. It's a huge one Friday night against the premiers of last year in the grand final. Does anything get spoken about last year, or is it just everybody knows and they'll be locked on anyway?
No, everyone knows, I think. Yeah. It's been a couple of years now. I think even the prelim from my first year. So, very keen to knock them off.
And who do you go to? Do you have an early matchup? Rioli, Castagna? There's a few of those guys that buzz around.
I haven't got a specific matchup yet. So, we usually do our pre-meetings, 2 days out. So,
and even if you did keep the cards close to the chest, they're like that. Now, Tommy, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck Friday night. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Lingy. Thanks, Mitch.
For all your new season Cats gear, hats, hoodies, you name it, get down to the Cats shop at GMHBA Stadium today or visit thecatsshoponline.com.au. The Cats shop is your one-stop shop for everything you need to support the greatest team of all. Go Cats!
Welcome back. You're with us on To The Final Bell, brought to you by Lake Imaging. Great to chat with Tommy Atkins there, doing a wonderful job. And I know, being the competitor that he is, Mitch, he'll be disappointed with Saturday night.
You just sense it in him.
Yeah, he's gritting the teeth for a really important performance, isn't he?
And it doesn't get any harder. Those small forwards, Castagna, Rioli, Baker, if he goes forward like he did a bit on the weekend, tough ask.
And maybe Bolton? I mean, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Dusty plays the Dusty role, and it's actually called that. We spoke to Dion Prestia on Friday night on ABC, and he said it's called the Dusty role. And with Dusty out, Shea Bolton was going to play the Dusty role. He played it magnificently. Yep. Well, was incredible. If Dusty comes back, and we're assuming Dusty.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, definitely. He comes back, Bolton doesn't play the Dusty role anymore. What role does he play? He could be one of those small forwards that Tom picks up.
And then he's talking about a team with no Lambert still, calf. Prestia out with another calf that he did. So that midfield's skinny. Bolton won't have to push in there, so it allows... True.
No Cochin.
Yeah, no Cochin with a hamstring. So some of these midfield, those small forwards might have to push more in the midfield, but I'm sure Tom will have his hands full with someone else coming his way.
Well, even when, if they're playing midfield or forward, when Richmond get the ball surging forward, they all fly down, don't they? There's numbers coming everywhere.
I hope... Dimmer's not listening to this with what Tom said about turning his back to the footy. They might try and expose that.
All right, let's get to a couple of your questions, and then we want to talk about former President Frank Costa. This one's from LJJAHN. Yep. Sometimes I'm not so good at pronouncing the names here.
Aljan.
Aljan, thank you. What do we need to do with our forward setup to be more efficient?
Yeah, I spoke about earlier, Sam Simpson, these guys kicking the ball in. I think that's what let the Cats down. Prior to the West Coast game was their big concern for me, was their connectivity between the back half and the forward half. You speak about the defence, and that's why Atkins moved down there. The other guys, Colajasny, Buse, they're not the guys that Cats always want the ball in the hands of. So these guys like Duncan and Simpson, if they're the ones that can be kicking inside 50, that allows Cameron and Hawkins to have a field day. I've loved the season so far of Brad Close since he's come back in.
Good call.
And he's, to be honest, probably gone past Dalhouse as that premier small forward in that side. Dalhouse has kept his spot. And
he's kept it more on pressure, hasn't he, Dalhouse, and the work rate he does off the ball. Close looks more dangerous around the ball and getting the ball.
Yeah, so I'm really keen to see, though, when Radiglare is fit, whether they go with the three. Terms of the question and the efficiency, that might be something that they can work on in the second half of the year.
It'll be a challenge, won't it? Because if they go with three and Radiglare playing as the backup ruckman, Gary Rowan, he puts a lot of pressure on, I know, but he's almost a tall forward. I wonder if Radiglare just becomes the permanent ruckman.
Yep.
We're saying maybe Darcy Fort gets a run this week. Maybe they back in Reece Stanley again. But I think maybe in the next few weeks, if Radiglare just is the number one man.
Yep.
And his competitiveness, his jump, his everything, just has him take that mantle.
And game 150 for Gary Rowan this week as well. He looks so good in that three-pronged attack against West Coast when the ball was coming in quick. So that's what they need if we're talking about efficiency.
Absolutely. This one's... Thushan underscore something. Should the AFL explore increasing bench numbers instead of the sub rule? I am of the opinion no, don't increase bench numbers. I've been against the medical sub, but for the concussion sub.
Yep.
I still hold with that. I know we've seen a few players go down early and that sub comes in. The argument could be made that clubs are taking less risk with injured players because they know they've got the sub there. So, yes, there is some compelling arguments, but I'm still currently holding to four on the bench with a sub being only a concussion sub.
I'm with you. I think when the sub is activated for an injury in the third or fourth quarter, it is too much of an advantage to that team because they get a fresh player on. That player's coming off has already played 50, 60, 70% of the game. The fresh player coming on gives them too much of an advantage. And I think what needs to happen next year, if they keep this medical sub, is to make it 12 days mandatory for everyone. If it's concussion, it's 12 days automatically. Grian Myers gets subbed out. He's every chance to play this week. That's not how the rule was implemented. And clubs are now getting, and not saying the Cats are bending the rules. That's what everyone's doing. So I think it should be 12 days mandatory. In terms of the bench numbers, personally, I think it should go back up to 90. The 75 is too
rotations?
Few.
Rotations?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's when you're talking about injuries, that's maybe what's getting to it.
Maybe you just hit on something too. The medical sub you can use it for an injury if it occurs in the first quarter, maybe first half.
Yeah.
So you're not able to make a medical sub in the second half and get that massive advantage of a fresh player.
Yep.
And if an injury happens in the second half, well, you're not expecting the rest of the group to play an entire or near an entire game of football one down. But if it's in the first quarter, okay, make it. You can make a medical sub. If it's anywhere in the game, it can be concussion.
Yep, I like that.
Maybe.
One other thing quickly that what the EPL do is if one team has their sub, regardless of whether the other team has an injury or not, they can still use it. So it sort of levels the playing field a bit. So if, for example, Geelong use their sub third quarter, get a fresh player into the game. Richmond haven't got an injury. They can inject a player into the game to even the playing field.
Okay, I like it. I was thinking. This one's from Rod Boucher. This is about Darcy Fort getting an opportunity after a best on ground in the VFL. Yes, we believe so. This one's from Char Duncan Cloud. I like it. What is your favourite skill to warm up pre-game? Mine was always making sure my touch with the ground balls. I'd often get Brendan McCartney, who was a coach, just to either boot or throw just rockets at me along the ground, ugly bounces. I felt if I had that touch below my knees, wasn't fumbling pre-game, I had confidence in my hands to go into the game. You know, you warm up naturally with your running, with your kicking, with your all of that.
Yeah.
But just that touch at ground level I always wanted to have.
And the ground ball has never been more important in the game still.
No. If you can be clean, one touch, and just not only clean to pick up, but then to execute skill under pressure, everybody else is making decisions to move from there on the base of you being one touch. I agree. This one's from Trax Scoot. You were just mentioning the forward structure, Mitch, before. Who should play deeper, Cameron or Hawkins?
I think Hawkins should play deeper. I think Cameron, Hawkins got a beautiful field kick as well, but I think Cameron pushing up like he did at the Giants, that's my opinion. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I feel that. I think if Cameron can get up the ground, his opponent has to go with him. There's others that you just let go. Across anyone in the competition, if someone's hunting up too high, you go, okay, you can get a mark up a million miles up the ground. I'll catch you when you're coming back through. They go with Cameron. That draws that opponent out and allows Hawkins to perhaps get some one-on-ones. If Gary Rowan's getting himself into a dangerous position, Brad Close is a threat at the moment. So all those players are moving to dangerous parts of the ground. It should allow isolation. And then if Hawkins, just in the play, Cameron gets up the ground a little bit, play comes down and Hawkins gets a bit high, that's when you see Cameron get in behind Hawkins and use his running ability. And I think a couple of times we've seen him get goal side of his opponent. So there's still, it's not always going to be Cameron just get it up the ground. Get it really high and then there still could be room for him to get it deeper again if Hawkins is drawn a little bit out. So isolation is the key. You ask any key forward, they do not want to be flying for a ball against the other key forward.
Yep.
So Hawkins and Cameron flying for the same ball means the two opponents can be working together and perhaps a third who's coming to help out. If they're isolated, they'll back themselves in.
Be good fun being Corey Enright, the forwards coach at the moment, wouldn't it?
Just moving the little pieces around the board and say, here, do this, do that.
Yep.
It would be very nice. Keep sending your questions in. Thank you to those ones. I'm going to keep trying to get to as many as I possibly can throughout the year. Keep them coming in. We really appreciate them. Email, social media, whatever it is, keep firing them at us. It is a sad time for the Geelong Football Club. Former president, Frank Costa, I think 1999 to 2010, president of the club, passed away after a long battle with lung cancer. And as I said right at the start of this podcast, all of our thoughts are with the Costa family at this very, very sad time. A lot of people reminiscing since it's happened about his impact on the football club and when he came on board as a president and some of the decisions that was made by him and the board at the time. And the club is respected, is highly competitive, is financially viable right now. But way back in 1999, it wasn't the case. What are your memories as a young man then, Mitch, of the Geelong Football Club in those times?
I think my first year as a member was 1999, Lingy. and just reading everything postscript now, going back and speaking to people who around the football club and you've had the best ride of all, just his decision to go and get and pinpoint some of the key people. Brian Cook, pulling him out of West Coast, already winning two premierships as the general manager then, CEO of the Eagles. The foresight to go and do that and turn Brian Cook from one of the leading administrators on the West Coast to then probably the number one administrator on the East Coast was an incredible decision and has changed the football club. Then the Bomber decision, which you know all too well. I think those couple of calls have changed the Geelong Football Club to the way it is today. And the way they, you talk about the money, but also Brian Cook's ability to turn this stadium into a revenue driving facility for the club is extraordinary.
And to set up the future of the footy club because of that. You're right. I've always said the greatest appointment the Geelong Football Club has ever made was Brian Cook. Phenomenal, the way he was able to turn the club around financially, culturally, and also to provide an opportunity on the playing field. The second most important appointment was Mark Thompson.
Yeah.
And Frank and his board at the time to make that decision to say, let's go and get the best CEO. And they did some homework on who that was. They identified that as Brian Cook. To say it is one thing, to actually go and execute it and do it and go and get Cook. And we've heard Cookie talk in the last couple of days about the relationship he has then built with Frank over that time and the importance of that relationship speaks so highly of Brian and of Frank and his impact. And then to identify and say, okay, we're going to get this great CEO. Let's go and get a young coach who's going to develop a list with the potential to win a premiership. And they went and got a young bloke who was coaching, assistant coaching at North Melbourne and had a wonderful playing record at Essendon and back Mark Bomber Thompson in. Two incredible appointments. And throughout that time, when financially it was tough, when Bomber was all about developing young players, and I was one of those, lucky enough to be one of those, and at times, as all young teams and young players do, we're inconsistent. We had some rubbish losses. We'd have a good win. We'd have another bad one. Frustration. Fans would be, is this kid any good? Bomber keeps playing this bloke. He's no good. Who's this Joel Corey guy from Perth? He's rubbish. All of that. Frank and his board were able to provide an environment of stability that was tested at the end of 2006 when after there'd been some improvement in that we made a preliminary final and a semi-final and expectations had risen. 2006 was a disappointing year. Review was called for and a really thorough review was created. Throughout that time, it would have been very, very easy if there'd been an instability in the board and someone, I suppose, other than Frank as the president, to just bang the desk and say, right, get rid of him. He's no good. He can't coach. The list he's put together isn't going to win it. Let's start again. Instead, Frank provided that environment of stability where Cookie could do his review, recommend changes and go and get a Neil Baum and bring in leading teams and these things, but also back in Bomber to say, no, we are on the right path. This is the right group. We're gonna add these elements to it, but let's see the course. And well, history said it was certainly the right course to go down. And that's what I've always been thankful for, that environment where we were allowed to grow and develop and challenge each other over a longer period of time, which, Mitch, you've seen for so many years. You don't always get at AFL clubs that type of time to develop a list.
And we're going
to
see other clubs go through the same thing this year. Can the board stick fat with the current model and are they going to continue to see the course? Richmond, the side Geelong played this week, did the same and Damien Hardwick's produced the results. So, incredible tenure for Frank at the footy club. And not only to get those guys, but to keep Brian Cook would have had countless offers to go elsewhere.
He was almost or was sounded out to be the CEO of the AFL, CEO of North Melbourne, I think, at one stage where they practically backed the truck up and said, here's all the cash in the world.
Yep.
And you're right, Cookie stays because clearly he loved the club and wanted to see it through, but also because of that relationship that he had with Frank and other members on the board.
And to create and develop people like you mentioned Barmy, who's, you know, is a revered figure in football, but Steve Hocking as well to come through that program. We could be here all day.
Stuart Fox, who's now head of, or went to Hawthorn. We'll forgive him for that for a little bit as CEO, but now head of the MCC.
Yep.
And has nurtured and developed talent through that time, both on and off the field. Certainly a huge impact at the football club. And obviously those who grew up in Geelong and lived in Geelong know his impact around the Geelong Football Club. His business, extremely successful, huge global business, worth a few dollars over the years, Frank. So has had a major impact and a big family, eight daughters and lots of grandkids and definitely some great grandkids. They'll all be extremely sad losing him. So as I said, from all of us here at the Footy Club and all of us involved in the podcast, all our thoughts are with the Costa family, the extended Costa family, at this very, very sad time. We're going to finish up there, Mitch.
Yep.
Anything else to add about Frank? Did you ever have any dealings in the background where he didn't let rip on you at any stage or give you a little nugget or anything like that?
He didn't mind the odd nugget. When you sort of got to know who you were as a Geelong fan and you sort of got that across, as a kid coming through 18, 19 in the media, he would be one that would always answer his phone. And now some of the people who are 10% as busy as Frank Costa don't even know where their phone is. Frank Costa would answer it almost every time. That gravelly voice, can still remember that and forever grateful.
You know, us in the leadership group occasionally didn't want him answering his phone. Remember that famous, I think the eve of the, was it the 2007 prelim final? And he'd been asked about what Neil Baum, you know, previously at Collingwood would bring as far as intel and on Mick Malthouse. And I think Frank's answer was, well, you know, Barmy thought Mick was a control freak. Well, so on the day of the prelim final, we wake up to headlines of Mick Malthouse, the control freak from Frank Costa. And like, can someone tell Frank just to keep that one to himself for a little bit? We don't need any more motivation going to the Pies.
As a journo, we need more old school people like this. Tell us the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Mitch, thank you so much for joining us. Now, are you sneaking off to Warrnambool yourself?
I am. So we're speaking now Tuesday. I'm heading off on Wednesday morning. So I might see if I can get stuck into Scotty and ask him where he was this week.
Well, you're a professional. So you come here, do your job, and now you're going away. Scotty just ran away. Can you make sure he's okay, though? Look after Scotty.
Make sure. For sure. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Great to have you back here at the old school. All the best. Doing a wonderful job too. AFL.com.au. Mitch is on... How many different podcasts are you on? Reel them all off. Give them all a plug.
Well, AFL Exchange, our podcast on a Monday. And then you've got The Round So Far, our show on Saturday night. And great to be part of the ABC Grandstand team with you as well, Lingy. So it's good fun.
The only thing, we don't get to actually work together on games on ABC Grandstand.
It's the Geelong connection. They're trying to pull us apart.
we got to link up our diaries a bit better. But great to have you here. Love your insight. Thank you to all of our listeners out there. Keep the questions coming in. We will be back again next week, hopefully talking about a fantastic Cats victory on Friday night. Hey, before we do go, I want to leave you on one last little nugget, maybe a little bit of excitement for the future of our AFLW team.
Yes.
Did you hear, Mitch, on the weekend that our VFLW team, we spoke to Amy McDonald last week, our best and fairest winner.
Awesome year.
Her first game back for the VFLW after resting a bit for AFLW, kicked their highest ever score and largest win with an 85-point win against the Western Bulldogs on Saturday afternoon. The Cats won it 15 goals 9-99 to 2-2-14, including 11 consecutive goals. Who says that they're a bit of a worry in the women's game is scoring? Our VFLW team could pile the goals on, Mitch.
Corey and Rodney's getting on the phone this week to sort it out for the men's side.
Yeah, get them kicking accurately. Absolutely. Well done to the girls. Keep up the great work. So hopefully that's the exciting build for the AFLW future as we head into the next few years, and that nurturing of talent's going to pay dividends and hopefully get that first AFLW premiership.
Revelation this year, Amy McDonald on halfback for the AFLW side. Can't wait to see what she can become with some of these young players coming through at the same time. That's the one thing about the Cats AFLW side that I've loved, Lingy, is the local talent to bring them all through together. I know they had a tough year, but they'll be contending soon enough.
Exactly right. So well done, girls. Keep up the great work. Hopefully the boys can follow suit on Friday night and knock off the Tigers in the grand final rematch. We will be back again next week. Thanks for your company.